Welcome to Logical with Ludmila, where we untangle the legal knots so that you don't have to. I'm Ludmila Yamalova, a U.S. qualified lawyer based in Dubai. And in each episode, we break down complex law into clear, practical insights that you can actually use. In today's topic, we're going to address a growing and deeply troubling practice in the UAE, buying residence visas. If someone offers you a residence visa for sale, you need to understand this. Yes, this visa may be real, issued by the UAE government, but it is also fictitious, meaning the basis on which it was issued is false, improper, or illegal. That makes the whole arrangement open to liability and even prosecution. This practice is not just risky, it is often illegal and sometimes criminal and almost always quite costly. We're going to explore what it means to buy a visa, how the law views it, and the types of improper visa schemes out there and the crushing liability that can follow. And I will also share a real-life case from our firm involving a married couple who thought they were buying a peace of mind but instead inherited a legal nightmare. Now, let's talk about the basics. Who can lawfully get a UAE residence visa and on what basis? So under the Federal Decree Law Number 29 of 2021, which is the main law on entry and residence of foreigners in the UAE, and its implementing regulations, which is the Cabinet Resolution Number 65 of 2022, a residence visa can only be issued if an applicant qualifies under a legal sponsorship category. So remember, these are the two laws, the main laws that create the legal foundation on the basis of which residence visas are issued and ultimately regulated. So the categories of residence visas are as follows. So it's an employment visa is perhaps the most basic one, or used to be the most common one, but less so now. But in order to have an employment visa, you are sponsored by a licensed company. Importantly, however, as per the law, your visa must correspond with the actual job role. So those who are not aware, when you receive an employment visa in the UAE, it will state your designation. So for example, a legal advisor or an accountant or an administrative assistant. And so by law, the designation on your visa must correspond with your actual job title or job role. So, and this is, by the way, governed by the Federal Decree Law Number 33 of 2021, which is also the UAE labor law, and enforced by MOHRE. And MOHRE, in this context, and I will use that term again, so I'll define it for those who are not familiar. It's Ministry of Human Resources and Amortization, otherwise called MOHRE, or previously was known as a labor department or labor authority. So one visa is the employment visa, and I'll give a specific example what that means. But for the time being, let's just set out the types of visas that can legally be obtained in the UAE in order to have UAE residency. The other type of visa is a family visa. So it's sponsorship by one of your family members. So UAE resident can sponsor immediate family member, for example. It could be your spouse that sponsors you. It could be your parents or you sponsor the parents. So that's basically, those are kind of called the family visa. So let's the main person, let's say your husband receives, or let's use example, your husband receives a job, and on the basis of the job, he gets an employment visa. He can then sponsor you as his spouse and the children as his children. He can also sponsor his parents. So that's basically called a family visa. And in that case, the people who have that sort of family visa, they are called the dependents of the sponsor, being in this case the father. So they're not linked. The visa in this case is not linked to a job. It's not linked to a property. It's not linked to an investment or a company. It's purely linked to the sponsor being the family member. And the third type of visa is the property visa, if you will. And there are different types of visas that fall under this category, but one way or the other, all the visas related to property visas, they're linked in naturally to a property ownership in the UAE. And this is depending on specifically the emirate. In some emirates, you could basically property up from 750,000 dirhams, so about $200,000 can qualify you for a property visa. It could be 5-year visa, or if it's anything above 2 million dirhams, it could actually be golden visa or a 10-year visa. So, but the type of visa that's issued, it's linked directly to your property or real estate ownership. The next type of visa is golden visa, kind of broadly, because there are different categories that fall under the golden visas. But apart from property ownership, some golden visas don't necessarily need to be linked to a job, but they don't need to be linked to a company. So it could be linked, for example, to certain investment with the company or with the bank, or sort of a fixed bank account that you have that's over 2 million dirhams. It could be a golden visa that's linked to your special talent. And let's say if you're a doctor, you have your own golden visa, or a lawyer, you can have your own golden visa. So these are called golden visas that are linked to either your investment in the UAE, financial investment in the UAE, or some kind of professional investment by virtue of the contributions that you make into the overall economy. So that's called the golden visa. And this is, by the way, subject to the Cabinet Resolution number 56 of 2018, which was further amended 2022, that sets out the different types of golden visas. And then the final type of visa, it's the investor or partner visa. So that's, for example, if you set up a company, then you're the shareholder of the company. So then you have a shareholder visa, or investor visa, or partner visa. So that's distinct from investor visa in terms of investing in the property, because that's called in simple terms a property visa. And so this would be like more like a company visa. So it's company ownership visa. So you're listed as a shareholder. And to have these kinds of visas, you don't necessarily need to have to be the sole shareholder. So you could even have multiple shareholders, and each one of them will have this investor or partner visa. And by the way, I did a podcast on this very topic in terms of what qualifies to receive and the different categories and the requirements that qualify you to receive partnership visa, if those who are interested. So anyway, so these are, at a high level, kind of the legal basis for obtaining UAE residency. So anything that outside of these categories or somehow does not match up in real life with the specifications or eligibility requirements of each one of these categories is effectively against the law. And now let's break it down into two most dangerous scenarios that we have seen, and unfortunately are all too common, especially the first one. It's all too common. And that's basically buying your own employment visa, right? We know so many people who, they could be personal trainers, they could be artists, you know, they could be interior designers, and they wanted the UAE and they want to be in the UAE either because they have some kind of a business or because they've moved here with, they just want to, with their friends. But they don't either have a job, they don't want to have a job, and they don't qualify for any of these other categories, such as property ownership, because obviously you need to have enough money to buy property. You don't qualify to have your own company visa, because obviously that comes at a pretty significant cost as well. Which, by the way, used to be the most perhaps commonly used vehicle, is just to set up your own company if you wanted to have a visa. But now there's so many different other options, so that's no longer kind of the main or the most common option. But one way or the other, that option is pretty costly for somebody who perhaps can make a living but doesn't have so much money as to maintain ultimately a company for themselves, right? Because basically, it's like a freelancer like that. The only other way they can obtain a license for themselves or even residency for themselves is basically setting up their own company. But a company comes at a fairly significant cost. And I've done a separate podcast on this as well, by the way, if anybody's interested. Having a company, which ultimately, if you don't have money or you don't have property, you don't have enough, 2 million dirhams to put in the bank account, and you don't have any one of these special talents, then your options to have a residence visa are limited, right? So either you open up your company or you have an employment visa. Now, having a company comes with quite a bit of cost. So therefore, having an employment visa is the easiest. But since you don't actually need to have that employment, because let's say you have your own business, you have your own, your personal trainer, or you're some sort of a music coach. It's very common in the UAE to buy an employment visa. So in other words, you have residency here on the basis linked to employment, but it's not actually your actual employment. It's just basically you have a visa that was issued to you by a company that ultimately sells you this visa, but it's not representative of what it is that you do for that company. And in fact, in all other ways, you don't really have any relationship to that company. You just basically bought a visa from them. So this scheme is all too common, and I have to tell you, and I know a lot of people, you know, who have these kinds of visas, or I know of people, and but I just, from a legal standpoint, this is not proper. This is not in line with the law. In other words, it's illegal because ultimately it's based on like a fake employment. As I mentioned earlier, the law is pretty clear, and that's in particular the Cabinet Resolution Number 1 of 2022, which is Article 6. Clearly, that's the employment law in particular that says employment-based residency must reflect an actual job registered with your specific agency or MOHRE. And the employment residence permit must reflect actual employment, job title, and salary. What that means is that if you have an employment visa, let's say you're an admin or an office boy or office girl that's listed, you must be working for that company doing that job in simple terms. And if you don't have that, then you're violating and the employment law and the immigration law. The employment law or the employment law as well, it just clearly requires that any kind of employment relationship is in addition to the visa. There's a whole sort of employment relationship that needs to be registered with different government authorities. So you need to be registered with MOHRE, which is Ministry of Human Resources and Amortization, or a specific free zone where the company is set up. And they have an employment agreement that they register with the authority for you. Then you have, obviously, on the basis of that agreement, then you apply to immigration, and the immigration issues your residence visa. On the basis of the employment agreement. So there's your relationship, your employment relationship with the country, with the government of this country is kind of multifaceted and it's officially registered. So it's not just here, I have contract for you and you can perform services for me. So your employment agreement is registered with MOHRE or the economic zone where you're operating, and your visa is linked directly to that employment agreement. So if you actually don't work for that company and don't perform that job, then you're technically speaking violating the both the employment law and the immigration law. And there is a specific cabinet resolution number 21 of 2023, which sets out penalties for these kinds of violations. And the penalties can be quite severe. So when someone is issued an employment visa for a job they don't have, which they actually ultimately don't have, it creates, for example, MOHRE violations, risk of blacklisting, salary-related obligations, if it's for the company, and then fines between 50,000 to 200,000 dirhams, as well as possible criminal prosecution. Now, I'll stop here for a second because these fines I'm talking about, they don't just apply on one side. They apply on both sides. So it's, obviously the company who's issued these ultimately fictitious visas or fake visas, so they are committing a crime. So they're subject to all of these regulations, as well as the person ultimately who has this fake visa is also committing a crime because he or she is ultimately operating on the basis of a fake visa, for lack of a better term. So this is quite serious, and that's why I wanted to kind of zero in on this. And so, for example, the Cabinet Resolution Number 21 of 2023, which sets out the penalties, in particular, is Appendix 2 that has a fairly detailed list of the penalties for these types of employment and immigration violations, has a whole list of, for example, that if you're employing a foreign worker without a work permit, the fine is 50,000 dirhams per employee, right? And if it's repeated, it's 100,000 dirhams and potential suspension of company license. Not insignificant, and that's basically for all those companies that are hiring employees without the proper worker permit. And then equally so, as per the law, via sort of issuing or using a work permit for a non-existent job, The fine is also 50,000 dirhams and may also trigger immigration penalties such as visa cancellation and blacklisting. So this is a specific example where, let's say, a company is selling visas to employees who don't actually work for them, so they're non-existent jobs, right? So that is, as per the law, it's not only illegal, it's subject to a 50,000 dirham fine and can lead to other sort of immigration penalties and blacklisting. And then another kind of related penalty is the non-payment of WPS or the wage protection system or non-payment of salary. And why this is relevant is because when you have an employer registered to your company, if you're on the mainland, then by law, and increasingly so in other free zones, by law, you're supposed to pay their salary through WPS. If you don't pay, there's also a fine for that, which is anything from 1,000 dirhams to 5,000 dirhams per employee, depending on the sort of delay of duration and number of employees. And what that means is that whenever the company is hiring these fictitious employees, obviously these employees, they're fictitious in terms of what, you know, their role with the company, but they are official for the purposes of the government institutions because they're registered with them and their contract is registered with Mohre or Economic Zone, and therefore they also should be registered with WPS. So if their salary as per the contract does not get paid to WPS, there's additional fines for the companies. So it's pretty serious, and it, I guess it surprises me, and it doesn't, how many companies all too readily sell these visas. And I understand at a human level this is done, you know, by a lot of companies to help their friends, you know, to help your family members, to help family members of friends, and so on and so forth. So at a human level I understand, but at a legal level it's important to at least share the legal standing of this particular practice, and to highlight the penalties and the violations that follow, because they can be quite severe. One, and two, because we have seen an increase in this law being applied, and I'm not sure if it's triggered by specific inspections or just kind of a word of mouth, but we have seen. We have seen an increase in these kinds of the inspections and the penalties. So therefore, it's important that you know, and then you decide, you know, how to structure your relationship moving forward. Just to kind of summarize this particular point, when, you know, someone buys an employment visa without real employment, or when a company sells visas under fictitious job titles, so it violates Article 6 of Cabinet Resolution Number 1 of 2022, and it also triggers fines under Cabinet Resolution Number 21 of 2023, and it can also lead to Mohre sanctions, company license suspension, and deportation orders. So in some cases, such as with some of our, you know, clients, the companies that were actually unknowingly set up in their names had sold employment visas to such individuals with zero real employment taking place. And so this is even more dangerous because then the company owners also become liable, and I'll talk about it next. So this is basically one category of visas for sale, so to speak, and that's an employment visa that you may be either offering to sell or you might have bought yourself. Just basically buyer beware. Technically speaking, under the law, these kind of practices are illegal, and therefore they, if ever you're found out, then you will, there'll be fines on both ends, financial fines of, you know, 50,000 dirhams, plus there could be immigration fines and deportations if it's serious enough. And it can, from the company's perspective, it could also lead to license freeze or license or business closure. So just be careful. Okay, so that's that one category of visas and fictitious employment, so to speak. And then the other one, and we've had a few cases like this recently, I guess, you know, it's every so often you see in my practice here, I've seen these kind of waves of, I don't know how to properly call them, maybe like almost like a mafia that prey on specific sort of geopolitical conditions and people in particular, and kind of seize the opportunity to try to squeeze as much from them as possible, relying on kind of their vulnerabilities, exploiting the situation. And in the process, you're creating a whole set of issues for those specific people. So again, this particular case, and we've had, this is just an example of one, but we had multiple cases. So I'll use this particular, this case, but it's actually a representation of many different cases. So that's, you know, a lot more complicated, and that's basically about those who are buying visas through basically buying visas, period, and they're not quite even sure what kind of visas they're buying. So these are not employment visas. Particular case does not refer to employment visa, but rather a company visa. Now, let me kind of explain how this happens, because it surprises me, but there's been a few cases like this. It seems like a whole industry that makes it happen, who creates it. So here's the example. So we've got a married couple who wanted UAE residency, and they approached a service provider, and there's a lot of these service providers, and perhaps this is a subject for another episode, another logical episode, and we'll talk about it. There's a lot of service providers that ultimately will sell you this kind of end-to-end assistance and, of company formation plus residence visas in exchange for some sort of one lump sum payment. And most of the time, these providers from experience, they'll tell you exactly what you want to hear, and they will promise you the sort of the rainbow and the unicorns. In more simple terms, they'll tell you, they assure you that they can do this for you. So this particular couple, they just, they were new to the UAE and they just needed a residence visa. And so one of these agencies said, yes, we can organize your residence visa. Now, what I had told you before, kind of earlier, that the specific categories of circumstances that exist that can allow for a visa to be issued. Make those credentials or those categories sort of eligible for visa, your residence visa. Apart from that, there's no other kind of exception. So when somebody says, I want to buy a visa, it has to be either to buy property. This was not the case. Based on the property or in sort of investment, financial investment in the company. This was not the case. Or it has to be a family visa, which is not the case here. Or it has to, be employment, which was not the case here. So what they did is it was basically related to the company formation. So that was one of the categories. If you open your own company, then you can have also residence visa. So this service provider sold this to our clients. This kind of end to end, we will get you a visa, and did not explain to the client that that particular visa was linked to ultimately company setup, account company formation. The more interesting is that they didn't actually have to even have these several companies. They could have just had one because they're a married couple. So you could have basically a sponsor, as I said earlier. The one person could have gotten, let's say, set up a company and then sponsor the spouse. But as a result of this, this particular agency, this couple ended up with two mainland companies, which were formed in their names, one for each spouse, despite them being married. They didn't need that at all. They could have just had one. Even more egregiously is that these companies were registered as sole establishments, meaning unlimited personal liability. So it means there's different ways to open a company. When this vehicle was used to obtain a residency, the typical legal entity that's used is called the LLC or limited liability company. So in the event you have basically legal separation between the company and the shareholder. But in this particular case, these two companies were set up as sole establishments, which means they have no separation, no legal separation between the company and the individual, which in simple terms means any kind of liability is personal liability. So let's say somebody files a case against the company, it's the shareholder is personally responsible for that payment. There's no limited liability. So this is it's a very dangerous legal setup and should only be used in very, very specific types of businesses. And how These two individuals were ultimately conned into not only opening up to companies, but also opening up as sole establishments. It just sort of defies belief. This third party agent I'm giving you sort of a high level snapshot of ultimately what happened, but it took us a while to figure this out. But this agent also registered someone else as the manager or on the license without the knowledge of the parties or obviously the consent, which means that effectively somebody else was, these people did not have any control over management of these companies because the agency registered someone else on the license to be able to operate on behalf of the companies. And most importantly, this is kind of the punchline, is that this agency, and you call them as third party agency, and we'll talk about a little more kind of the history behind this third party agency, but they also, so they basically set up, and perhaps this explains why there are two companies that were set up and not one, although they never needed to begin with, is that they were used to basically sell these fake employment visas to complete strangers. And that's without the couple's knowledge, so the knowledge of our client's knowledge. So in short, our client wanted to obtain a visa, residence visa. That's all they wanted to do, and that's basically what they're sure that they would get. And instead, they ended up having companies with employees and companies that were managed by some random people they didn't even know about. And the companies hired a bunch of these employees. They didn't even know about it, did not know how to even control the companies because they didn't have the sort of the reins to be able to manage the company. Another kind of, I guess, add insult to injury, the clients, because they don't really speak English, they didn't even speak to this, they didn't speak to this third party provider. It was always done through a middleman, like a friend recommended this third party provider because the friend spoke the language, the couple or the clients never met the agent or the representative of the agent who had kind of orchestrated this whole thing, nor did they ever meet or knew anything about the manager who was ultimately appointed on the license, the representative on the license of the company, which was a different person. So everything was done through this kind of middle person or the friend, again, when you come to the UAE and you're new, I understand you want, I get the appeal. So you meet a friend and the friend speaks your language and the friend assures you, listen, you want a visa, no problem. I know somebody who creates this visa, who does the visa. They do it like on the clock. It costs you X amount. And with that, from that, you get the service from A to Z. So basically, that's what they were sold. I get the appeal. Except in this particular case, they ended up with this sort of whole sort of web of liabilities. The point is, like, so I was going to fast forward 2 years, and that's when the client came to us. And at that point, the reason they came is because their visa was expiring, because it's an employment visa, or because company visa also has only a 2-year visa. So it was expiring at the end of 2 years, and they could not renew it. They could not cancel the visa, they could not apply for the new visa. And more importantly, they could not leave the country. Whoops. This was a big surprise. They came back into the UAE to renew the visa, and not only could they not renew it, they could not even exit the country to go back home to their home country because something was going on. And what was the something? This really perhaps is deserving of like a Hollywood script in a movie. It took us a while to figure out what was going on, and that's because the clients themselves had no idea what had gone on, what was going on, in part because they obviously didn't speak the language, in part because they had no contact, actually direct contact with the people who actually orchestrated all this kind of rigmarole behind the companies. And in part because they had no documents. They had like almost no documents. So they came to us and basically just said, well, we came here to renew the visa. We had, they had their Emirates ID. And so, but we are not allowed, we cannot cancel or renew our visa and we cannot leave the country. We don't know what's going on. It truly was just like this. So we had to kind of reverse engineer, figure out based on just the Emirates ID, what had gone on. So with, you know, having the Emirates ID number, then you can kind of retrace the steps through the various government systems in terms of, okay, so this Emirates ID was issued on the basis of what? And so we kind of had to go backwards that way. But also those who have lived in the UAE and have seen the amazing benefits of all the sort of digital systems and tools that we use, if you have these systems available to you, it's inordinate how much information or unbelievable how much information you can find that's linked to the government that's sort of that officially available through the various government apps. And so, for example, if you have UAE Pass, you can log into if you have UAE Emirates ID, then you should have UAE Pass. If you have UAE Pass, through the UAE Pass, you can enter into so many different government portals, such as immigration portal, into the labor portal, into health ministry portal, into whatever portals you need to be able to obtain the information. So, but as we're trying to do that for them on the basis of Emirates ID, things were not kind of clicking, and that's ultimately what we learned later is because on the immigration file, their contact details were provided somebody else's contact details or registered through their immigration file, which further resulted in this breakdown in communication between the person and all the kind of the data on the government portals. Fast forward after a few weeks of our due diligence, when we had to sort of reverse engineer to figure out what is going on, why are these two people not able to leave the country? So we found out that that there were basically two companies that were linked to these and that these two people were quote unquote proud employers of 20 employees between them. So between them, they had a whole team of 20 staff. So one, I think, had 10, the other one had 11, the other one had 9, something like that. So if you just think about it, they had no idea that they even had these companies, let alone that they had employees attached to these companies. And, you know, having an employee to the register the company is not a small thing, as I mentioned earlier, because that employment relationship has to be formalized with various government authorities. It means that these employees were registered with MOHRE or economic zone, or MOHRE, with the immigration authorities. Because remember, these vehicles that were proposed to them, they were brand new vehicles, were used to set up to sell visas. So whoever it is, the third party agent that helped create these vehicles, obviously was very busy selling the visa right away. So these clients end up being found out that they were proud, quote unquote, employers of these 20 employees, and that, you know, also some visas by that time were expired, others were about to expire. Some employees' salaries were listed at anything from like 35,000 dirhams and up. That's $10,000 a month. And that's, you know, again, that kind of, there's a liability to the company and ultimately the shareholder, because it's a sole establishment, i.e. not a limited liability company. So that's just for one employee. I mean, there are other employees with lower salary, but still you have, these people realize that they had these 20 employees, some salaries were, you know, ranging from anything from 5,000 dirhams to 35,000 dirhams for each. The company license was expired by that time also. And more importantly, as I mentioned, the client had like no documents. They had no memorandums of understanding, no trade license, no credentials. We had to kind of dig it all out and with their Emirates IDs ultimately unearth at least some sort of semblance of documentation. And then, so as I mentioned earlier, the immigration files also were linked to third-party phone numbers, emails, and Emirates IDs, which made it more difficult for us to be able to get into the government systems to obtain information. And ultimately, it seemed that these clients were flagged by immigration as having fictitious company for sort of purposes of selling fake visas. And so as a result, because the companies were flagged by immigration, which we found out earlier or later rather, the clients who actually had a travel ban on their file, although they didn't, there was not like a criminal complaint that was filed against them, but there was a travel ban which disallowed them to exit the country. So even though they had nothing to do, this travel ban for the immigration, they had nothing to do with them personally, because they themselves personally had not violated any laws, but it was because their companies, so-called companies, which had been flagged by the authorities for having violated some immigration laws. But because the companies don't have a separate legal personality from the shareholders, it's the shareholders as well that were personally flagged for the purposes of the sort of immigration violation. Why does this matter? Why is this important? The clients thought, okay, well, listen, but we've seen because the license had expired, so it's no big deal. In their mind, by the way, this is what they had decided, because by that time that we found out all this, or we're still unearthing the bits and bobs, they saw the license expired, so we're not responsible anymore. That is not the case at all. Even when expired company license, the obligations don't disappear. They remain and only accumulate. If your license expired, you're still required to basically pay the license renewal fees. You're still required to register with the federal tax authorities for VAT and or corporate tax, and you still required potentially to submit tax returns. You are still required as a proud owner of this business to register all your employees with WPS, which is the Wage Protection System, and MOHRED, the Ministry of Human Resources and Amortization. And whenever you have employees, the employees also have all sorts of obligations, or the company has obligations to the employees, such as the end of service benefits, salary payments, and then also there could be the employee's visa overstay as well, the penalties related to the employees, that is, not that the company or the shareholders, but the employees can also be a liability to the company. And that's not to mention any potential court cases by the employees against the company. And the court cases could be for non-payment of salary or non-payment of end of service or, for example, a failure to renew the visa correctly. So here is just because you have an expired license does not relieve you of any obligation whatsoever. On the contrary. In this case, because the company, the legal structure of this vehicle, the company, was a sole establishment, the client had no limitation on liability, and therefore were personally responsible for this entire mess. And then they just thought, okay, well, we want to resolve this. It's not so simple to resolve this either, because to legally close the company, you have to basically liquidate the company. And to liquidate the company, you need to basically, the first all employment contract must be terminated. So, because you're talking about, okay, to liquidate the company, you need to basically get rid of all the liabilities. What's your main liability in this particular case? Employees, right? You have 20 employees between them. So first, in order to clean up or take care of that liability, you need to sort out that sort of relationship. What does that mean? It means that if you have employees in the company, you need to cancel them. How do you cancel them? Before you cancel them, you need to terminate them. So in other words, you need to terminate the employment agreements. So you need to submit, give them termination letters. As part of the termination, there's a whole process through MOHRED that needs to go through, where they need to sign that they've received all the dues, and that's part of the termination of the employment contract. And obviously at that point, they may have claims against the company. I didn't get paid my salary, or I did not get paid my end of service. And until that time, you're not able to, if there's a dispute, you will not be able to terminate their employment agreement. But once the employment is terminated, then the next step is to cancel their visas through immigration. So, and if there's any kind of overstaying fines on any of those employees because they did not renew the visa in time, and they would not have necessarily renewed the visa in time because of all this mess with the company. So there's also, you have to So you have to first cancel the employment contract, terminate the employment contract, pay off all the employment dues as per the employment law. Then you have to cancel the visa for those employees and then pay off all the penalties and fines that you'd have, they might have been accumulated for each one of those employees. So that's just the employment part of the mess. And then the company ultimately has to be liquidated. And then you have to also, you know, renew the company license, because until you renew the company license, you cannot apply for any kind of, you know, for a termination of employees, for cancellation of their visas, or for liquidation. So that also is another liability that you have to pay. And then the company ultimately has to be liquidated. And so to liquidate is, you know, it's not enough that it's just, okay, well, the license expired, I didn't pay for it, the company is finished. No, you actually need to go through a formal liquidation process. And it requires, among other things, like appointing a liquidator, having audited financial reports. That's, you know, if you had to have audited financial reports, you obviously need to have had an auditor to keep all your books. And then you need to settle all the outstanding payments that may be due. So that's, and then as part of this, you know, kind of, that's just some of the partial requirements for liquidator. Before the liquidator issues his or her a liquidation report, that will be part of your application to close the company. So, I did a whole podcast on just this very topic on company liquidation. So if you're interested, sort of listen to that. But, you know, what's clear, so each one of these steps takes time, money, and professional support. Yeah, so what's kind of the bigger lesson? You know, the residency status is not something you can or should, you know, sort of buy casually. You need to know what type of visas you're getting and, you know, what legal basis, and, you know, who the sponsor is. So what obligations come with it? Because whether or not you read the fine print, the UAE authorities will hold you responsible for, you know, what your name is attached to. And so in this case, it's, you know, after our due diligence, and it took us quite some time, you know, when we finally met with the client to give them the documents that relate to their case, and they, by the way, they were just partial documents. You know, here we had to go to Mohre. When we came from Mohre, we had employment agreements for these 20 employees, and that's and then employment agreements, and then we had their Emirates IDs and their passport copies. And so this is where you could tell, okay, how many employees you had, who the employees were, you know, what nationalities they were, and what their salaries were listed in the employment agreement, which is horrified. Then as part of our other due diligence, because we went to obviously the economic department or DT, where the companies were licensed, and we got all the documents from them in terms of, you know, the application and the type of companies they had, who this manager on the license was listed. And so basically at that point, I think that's, and then what the activity of these sole establishments were, the business activity. So that was kind of another packet of information we gave the client, which they had not had. And then we obviously had to go through the immigration and then get the immigration file for the employees on the basis of which their visas were issued. So then what we also needed to do is, because, we had to figure out kind of, you know, go backwards and figure out what happened, right? Now I'm giving you basically sort of the results of what we finally figured out. But to get to that, we also had, because we knew they couldn't leave the country. So why could they not leave the country? Because we needed to go to immigration to check our client's status. And the immigration was showing they were perfectly clear. They personally, their immigration file was perfectly clear. So, but yet they could not leave the country. So we figured, okay, so we need to go to the police to find out, maybe there's some sort of a travel ban that's listed, that's linked to them because of maybe these, you know, company violations. So we go to the police and conduct the due diligence with the police. The police also, there's nothing on them with the police. There's no criminal case. There's no bounce check. So there's no complaints. So there could not be a travel ban that's sort of linked to the police, because it wasn't with the police. Then we went to the court to see if there was any court cases that were filed as a result of perhaps with these, either by employees or by some other suppliers or, you know, so-called customers of these fictitious companies. But the court portal is also clear. So there were, you know, we set up a court court portal for them just so they can track what's happening. But there were no court cases that were filed. So anyway, after quite some time, we had to go. We had found a special place in immigration, a special department, where ultimately we learned that, you know, and they were told in kind of no unequivocal terms, you know, you will not be able to leave the country until you sort out this mess, and i.e. the mess was the companies. These companies, which once again are based ultimately fictitious companies that were set up for the very purpose of selling visas. They sold these 20 visas. They had these 12 fictitious employees. There were obligations that were related to that, plus the fines and penalties and sanctions related to this kind of illegal practice in each one of these employees. And there was basically no other way for them, for the people to leave the country until all that has been sorted. And as I said, you know, we were just kind of, it was just the tip of the iceberg in terms of, you know, what it would take to sort this out, because it's one thing to terminate employment agreements, but any of these employees can also file court cases against the company. So it truly was kind of an iceberg of a spider web of issues. So, you know, obviously clients are like, well, listen, we're just expensive. It's going to be so costly. You know, we want to go against the agent. And yeah, I mean, theoretically, and perhaps when you're listening to it, thinking, well, somebody obviously set them up. That cannot be legal. And it's absolutely true. Whoever set them up, they did set them up. You know, they took advantage of their sort of vulnerable state. You know, the people that came didn't speak the language. They're kind of older clients, and they wanted to have this visa. So somehow, or these agents, the ring of these people, they prayed for this very type and identified them as kind of their next victim, so to speak, and pounced on it and did it very well, very successfully. So all this sort of company operations were done without the knowledge of the shareholders, right? So therefore, it's all illegal, it's fraud, it's, you know, it's all criminal. Different aspects of the criminal law would be implicated here. So, okay, yeah, and that was the client's reaction. So let's go and file, you know, find the agent. I mean, easy enough to say, but remember, finding this agent does not resolve the issues, right? It's you still, because if the clients wanted to leave the country, which they desperately wanted to leave, they still needed to resolve their own issues. Having found this agent it would not have helped. I mean, would not have at least resolved the issues. Maybe it would have helped, but would not resolve the issues. Still need to go through that. One, two, they couldn't find the agent because they actually, remember, never dealt directly with the agent. He was always through some kind of a middle person who spoke the language between the client and the agent. So they didn't even have any details of the agent, and nor did they have the details of the manager on the license. I mean, again, this information could potentially be piecemealed, but in the meantime, to get to that is just, you know, they never dealt with these people directly, nor do they have any documents. Remember, the documents I just kind of shared with you that we had unearthed, they didn't have these documents. So there were no documents between the client and this agent for those services that the agent provided to them. So let's say in simple terms, there should have been some sort of a service agreement, some kind of an engagement agreement between the client and the agent that would be, so let's say something to the effect of, well, we're engaging us to issue these visas. These visas will cost you X amount, and we are such and such, and you pay this money to blah, blah, blah account. And then you kind of maybe define sort of what included in these services. I mean, that's something that should have happened. Instead, that did not happen. So there was not even the document to tie the client to this so-called agent. I hesitate to even call them that because they're, you know, in my view, they're just nothing but fraudsters and the criminal gang. But they're the ones who kind of orchestrated, and obviously they knew what they were doing because they did, you know, in all fairness, they did open up companies, they did issue them visas, and they did a few other things, you know, after that. So they knew the system, and obviously they were preying on these kinds of people and knew how to exploit the system. So yes, but what they did was clearly illegal, and there is definitely a legal recourse because the clients kind of were getting frustrated. But how come we cannot bring them to justice? You can bring them to justice, but it's, you know, it's complicated, it's expensive, and it's ultimately rarely satisfying because, you know, because ultimately you can only hold them responsible before the criminal authorities, and then only if the criminal authorities find them guilty, then on the basis of that criminal judgment, you can then file a case with civil case and for compensation, for financial compensation. And you know, that is a lengthy process. In the meantime, you're still stuck with this kind of the monkey on your back, right? With this hot potato, the company that is with all these fake employees. So fighting these two battles, one, trying to unwind this web of problems, and two, trying to chase this agent who's, you know, this basically the criminal masterminds. This is basically you're fighting two battles. You're burning candle at both ends. So on the one hand, the client was really upset about not being able to, you know, thinking, oh, there's no justice. And we made it very clear that justice is there. You know, it's just you need to figure out whether you can fight both fights at the same time or whether you want to focus and prioritize, you know, the most important issue and then ultimately deal with the second one later. Or if you, you know, if you want to do it both, to both of them and at the same time, but you need to be prepared to pay and also emotionally be prepared to have to fight this out. But, you know, most importantly, to be honest with you, I've been in the UAE for too long. And then whenever you see these kinds of these little criminal activities is sort of like almost like rings, criminal rings. There's a timeline within which they operate. They kind of seize the moment. They try to line their pockets as much as possible, capitalize quickly, and then skip town. So in most cases, and most likely in this particular case, because it was so wrong and so criminally sort of despicable what they did, it's most likely that whoever it is was responsible for this. They left the country long ago. And so even if you have a court case at the end, or even if you try to file a criminal complaint, it's very likely that the police would not even be able to find anyone responsible. But that's, again, provided that we would have actually been able to find the links to these people. What's the real takeaway? The truth is that, you know, the whole disaster could have been avoided with just basic, proper legal due diligence. And the clients did not obtain proper advice. They were new to the country, which I understand, but they did not, you know, they didn't seek proper counsel from proper professionals. You know, they didn't ask for any of the documents. They had no copies of no documents. They did not speak the language. They didn't have like a sort of a translator with them. They didn't understand what they were signing. And so you shouldn't be signing if you don't understand what you're signing, especially if you're signing in a foreign language. So in our case, the clients, yes, they were taken advantage of for sure, but they also did not ask the right questions and they did not involve legal or financial professionals when it mattered the most, which unfortunately is something. So it's kind of it's a double-edged sword and it's also their fault to an extent. The final thoughts. And when you're thinking of buying residence visa, you know, and in general, when you come, especially to a new country, if it sounds too easy and too fast, or you know, it's probably when it sounds too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. So don't rely just on sales, marketing agents with a silver tongue, and you know, rely on professionals. You have lawyers, auditors, compliance specialists. If you come to a foreign country and you want to do business here, or you want to live here, or you want to have sort of benefits from this country, you need to go to specific professionals to obtain guidance to make sure that what you're doing is right. Now, you don't have to continue to pay lawyers, accountants, auditors to do these things for you. But before you commit to which course of action to take, you should receive proper legal advice. In particular, or financial advice, because remember, a company, setting up a company here is not what it used to be. Now, if you have a company, now you have to register with FTA, the Federal Tax Authority, and you have to submit tax tax statements at the end of every year. And that means you need to have an auditor. You need to keep your books. It's not simple as used to be. So before you decide which course of action to take and hire somebody else to actually help you do it, you should at least obtain proper information for a proper professional that will help you, kind of put you on the right path, right? And then at that point, you don't have to continue to work with that person. You can go and you can even do a lot of these things yourself, by the way. A lot of these services are now accessible online. I mean, so much has changed in the UAE, and this, the whole country is so much more efficiently run now, and all these services are available through all sorts of digital channels. So you don't even need kind of middle part people. You can do much of it on your own. So here, that's basically the case of our clients who thought it was all too easy to receive a UAE residence visa and instead are now stuck in the country trying to unwind this the spider web of issues and liabilities. And it'll take some time. Even if once they cancel all these employees, it may still take some time until they actually liquidate the company. And because the immigration authorities clearly told them, until the companies are liquidated, we're not going to be able to, you'll have to stay in the country. So I guess the lesson is, if something is, it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So that's it for this episode of Logical with Ludmila. If you found this episode useful and you like what we do, you can always find more on our website at lylawyers.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And for the full experience, you can watch our video podcast on YouTube. Until next time, stay informed, stay safe, and keep things logical.